titled the presentation today, Transitions, Surviving the Crises and Changes in Careers. There is a lot, and I know up here there's certainly a lot of people who are concerned about what kind of work they're going to do. A lot of people come up here as kind of an interim. They come after school, after college, or after some major event. And when they go back out there in the big world, what are they going to do? A lot of people have lost jobs. Thank you. All my those precious words are lost. Okay. But this is a time of transitions for a lot of people, or anticipated transition for a lot of people. Some people know that their particular company is going to be laying off a lot of workers after Christmas. Those people certainly in Oregon who work in the wood products industry are kind of sitting on the edge of their seats wondering when the axe is going to fall on them. I'm closest to Oregon, of course, but throughout the country there are lots of people who are not sure if their job is going to continue, not sure if they are going to continue in their job, and others who are saying, I'm not sure that I want to do what I have been doing for the last 15 or 20 years. As I mentioned yesterday in the presentation, in the 20s, so often we select an occupation, a job, we move into a field because we think that's what we ought to do. To a certain sense, we are kind of programmed by society. And people move in and take a job with a company, with a business, they go into law and so forth because that's what they've kind of been expected to do for a long period of time. Moving into the 40s, and I'm not talking about any economic crisis or anything like that, by the time people get into the 40s, they're saying, hey, you know, is this really what I want to do? Some people come to that a lot earlier. But in the 40s, start making some reevaluations of what it is they want out of their full-time occupation, out of their career, as well as what that career offers to them and to society. And a lot of people are doing some real reevaluation. And so I've tried to come up with some kind of a little format that may be helpful. Some questions to ask. I can't answer the questions for any people. You have to do that yourself. Somehow or another, you have to do your own growing, no matter how tall your grandfather was. And if you look at my family, that grandfathers were pretty tall. But you've got to go through a certain amount of the process yourself. But hopefully this little diagram will be of some help. Over on the left-hand side, I said some questions to ask if you're choosing to leave a particular career or occupation. You're employed, you're just getting a little dissatisfied or greatly dissatisfied with it, or you're dissatisfied with the area of the country, or you've got terrible hay fever and it's just accentuated during certain seasons in this part of the year, and decide that, hey, maybe a different part of the country would be better, so forth. But anyway, if you're going to make a choice to leave, in other words, you're going to make a change rather than essentially hitting a crisis, then what are some questions that you can ask yourself that will help you to narrow down your options? Broaden them out, but still narrow down so they're manageable. The first question I would suggest you might ask yourself if you're going to choose to leave one career or one occupation and make a job change is, are you making the change in order to become somebody or because you are somebody? Are you making it in order to enhance a sense of being important for yourself? The person who is offered a chance, perhaps who has a very good job, got a job that he likes, but is offered a chance to become a partner in another company. Sounds really good. What is it that attracts you about that particular position? Is it the partnership? Is it the part owner? Is it the sense of control? Is it in order to be somebody? Or is it because you know you already have certain skills that you really want to employ in a new situation because you are somebody and have certain talents that will be utilized well in the new situation? A very basic point is, are you leaving one job in order to become somebody because theologically, because that's how you're going to get your sense of being? Or are you aware at a really deeper rate that you are somebody already? That because you're a child of God, you are important. And that sounds very basic when you come up here. It's not very basic out there. A lot of people don't deal with that. We're very, very special. We have that assurance that, hey, you are important because you're you. You're important because you're a very valuable creation of God's. You know, and then it seems to me our job is trying to figure out how do we fit this creation into all of God's creation. But if you know that you are somebody, you go out in terms of making any selection with a whole different sense of who you are than if you have to get a job, have to find a position in order to make you somebody. There's a difference between the affirmation of yourself and the trying to get someplace, the being and the grasping. So that's a question to ask yourself. Are you going to another job because you are trying to be somebody, or are you going there knowing that you already are somebody? Second question I'd ask you to look at is, in the present position you're in, are you using your gifts or strengths as well as they can be used? Is there anything you can find in that position that can help you develop the talents, the strengths, the gifts that you already have? You know, for some of you, I could do such and such. For others, maybe one of the talents you can develop a little bit is perhaps some personal relations, dealing with some heavy situations in terms of power struggles within the place where you are. What other skills and talents that you already have could you continue to develop where you are? A third question, as you think about making a change, are you running away from something? Or are you going to something? For those people who are trying to escape in a given situation, they may find that their demons follow them, because often people set themselves up into a new situation where they have exactly the same sort of relationships as they have had in a previous situation. I know one boy quite well, it comes around our house a lot, who is always having problems with the second in command, no matter what job he has. He always gets along very well with the boss, but then the boss delegates authority to somebody else. And this young man always has difficulty with the person who is the delegated authority. He's been in a number of positions, and the pattern is fairly clear. So when he's running away from one job, and he's quit several jobs because he just couldn't get along with that Linda, or he couldn't get along with that Brad, or whatever the name of the fellow or girl was that was his immediate superior, because they always gave him if he was a busboy, they gave him the worst tables. Another kind of a working situation, they always gave him the worst jobs, and they never appreciated him, and this sort of thing. The pattern is so similar. He always runs into that situation. So it's important, if you are running away from something, to face that. You know, what is there in my way of operating that sets up the situation so that I have those kind of people that I'm working with, that kind of a situation where I'm working with? How can I avoid creating that same situation in the next position that I take? If you're running away, and some of us do, there's no question, some of us say, well, I'm not going to take this anymore, I'm going to leave this in order to go to something else, anything else would be better. If you're running away, have you learned everything you could out of that situation? Can you see it as an opportunity to learn something about yourself, something about your work, something about your work habits, something about the way you relate to other people. Have you learned all you can from that situation? Some of the questions you could ask yourself in terms of questions to ask yourself if you say, yep, I'm really trying to get out of that situation to move to another one, is what is there in the current situation that I find myself that I'm afraid of? And I'm not talking about boogeyman or Bigfoot or something like that. I'm talking about what is there? Am I afraid that my I'm not valued, that somebody else is smarter than I am, somebody else might find out that I don't know as much as I purport to know, as I appear to know? Am I afraid that I might be fired? Am I afraid that, any questions? I mean, get below the very surface questions, but what am I afraid of? What do I fear in the situation I'm in? Because one of the things that, you know, that you do when you're afraid is you run away. That's one of your options. Before you run, check and find out what is the boogeyman in that particular situation, or boogie person, to be non-sexist about this, inclusive. When you identify at least the area of your fear, then ask yourself, what is it about that threatens me? Does it threaten my self-esteem? Does it threaten my sense of my career skills, my occupational skills? Does it threaten me because I don't have control of the situation? What is it about the threat or the fear that threatens me? And under having put those things together, the question is, if I stayed here, what's the worst thing that could happen? Now, I'm not having you ask that question to convince you to stay there, but to get some sense of kind of your parameters. Hey, what's the worst thing that could happen? I could get fired. Worst thing that could happen is that I'd have to work for Bart or Brad or whatever the guy's name is, or that I have to work under you know who. Or what's the worst thing that could happen? There's some sense in which dealing with the worst thing and then say, okay, if that happened to me, what could I do? And being able to answer. So you lost your job. So they fired you. All right. Could you find another job? When you get down to very basics, could you survive without that job? I'm talking about food, shelter, and clothing. I'm not talking about a new car, new refrigerators, and that sort of thing. I'm just talking about survival. Could you survive without that job? If you know you could do that, you've got great strength. You don't have to get panicked. If you feel you couldn't survive, then start looking at your priorities. What's valuable? What's important to me? Is that a threat to your self-esteem? Is that where you get stuck? If you're in the position of having your mill close or your company get merged and your position gets unmerged, gets yielded, if you are in the position of being fired and so you are no longer having a job, but I have been told that, you know, effective next Friday you will not have a job, you're in some sense of crisis, you have to leave. What kind of questions can you ask yourself then? Some of them aren't very different than the other one. One is, how is this a threat to me? What can I know about myself that can help me to continue to value myself? One of the worst things about losing your job, whether it's a company merger, the mill's gone out of work, you've been fired, they no longer need you, you've been on a provisional status and they're not hiring any more full-time teachers, whatever it is, one of the hardest things to deal with is your own self-esteem. For all of us, Our work is a great measure of our self-esteem. It's you know, consciously we have to become kind of tell us ourselves over and over again, I'm still a valuable person, even though Weyerhaeuser no longer wants me, or even though Evans Products no longer finds my work important to them, or whatever company we're talking about. Even Mike's Hamburger Place says, we just don't need you anymore, or better get out of here. That really, there's a sense in which you have to remind yourself that you're valuable, that as a person you're valuable, but then also deal with what other things do you know about yourself that can help you to affirm your own value as a person. Sometimes that takes some stock taking. You know, hey, I've got friends who really value me, who really think I'm important, who really, you know, they call me, they always seem glad to see me. You know, having a network of friends is very important, and you know you're part of that network. They can say, hey, I'm, you know, even I may not be the greatest hamburger flipper in the world, but people do see me as a good friend, find me good to be with, fun to be with, effective in terms of working together with them. What are some of the other ways that you can help to kind of affirm your own value as a person? Let me throw that open for a minute. If some of you have been in this situation, what kinds of things did you have to deal with, have to kind of list out for yourself when you were talking about how can I kind of keep in touch with the fact that I'm a valuable person when I've lost my job? Any of you have that situation?
Support of a family is
certainly very important.
I repeat to myself all of my good qualities over and over.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Sometimes even writing a list of them and putting them up on your refrigerator or on your mirror in your bathroom so that you're reminded, because the rest of the time you're beating yourself. You know, because you haven't done this right, and if I hadn't done that, they wouldn't have fired me. If I hadn't done this, or if I had done this instead, they might have laid off so-and-so instead of me. But some sense of affirming, as you say, the positive qualities you have.
Maybe getting some feedback from people at work who are different from immediate supervisors.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And there again, being willing to listen. I talked a little bit yesterday about hearing what people are saying without defensiveness. And certain, you know, there's a neat balance here. You have to have a certain amount of self-esteem before you can take that. On the other hand, if you can really basically get in touch with that, I want this information in order to learn from it to be helpful to me in the next position I take. Getting some feedback, yeah. Did you have something else? No. Anybody else?
I had to tell myself not to take it personally when I was moved to a different school because I knew it was the district office downtown. They didn't even know me, but they were just moving numbers of people here and there. I don't think they realized what effect it had on me to lose my friends that I'd spent time, you know, cultivating friendships with other staff members and that kind of thing. And I just had to tell, you know, keep telling myself, it's not me personally they're doing that to. It's just numbers of people.
Mm-hmm. And you can still, you know, mourn the loss of those relationships in the
well,
friendships.
Well, that's what happened, yeah. Mm-hmm.
But still say, hey, that isn't something that is because I'm not a valuable person.
I'm not
a
good person or a
valuable
member of the staff.
Yeah. Okay. More so in the case of a person who has lost a job than in those who are going to make a change, to deal with the question, what's the worst thing that can happen? Now that I've gotten the pink slip in my paycheck, or the papers come out saying Wilhelmina Mills is closing, and now I find out that I'm not going to have a job after December 1, or what? What's the worst thing that can happen to you? When you deal with the worst parameter, you start to deal with basic values, what's really important. Can you survive in the situation? If you know you can survive, then you can reduce the panic and make some decisions out of strength instead of Panicsville. The Chinese have a, writing in Chinese characters, as I understand it, I do not read Chinese, somebody just told me this, so I believe them, that the Chinese characters for opportunity are two. You can put together the Chinese characters for crisis are threat and opportunity. And when we think often of the term crisis, we think of it mainly in terms of threat. Look at it in terms of the other character of the Chinese letters. How can it be an opportunity? What could be some good things that could emerge from this particular crisis in your life? Is this the opportunity you've wanted to make a physical move, maybe to get closer to some other family or good friends? I think you can all think of instances of people that you've known that have made geographic moves at the point at which they lost a job. And certainly after the Second World War, lots and lots of veterans took that opportunity to break from the old family traditions of staying around where the family had grown up and made a move to a new part of the country. I don't think Washington and Oregon would have, half as many people as they do if it hadn't been for that particular time. I know my aunt and uncle had been, he was in the Air Force and during the service in the Second World War and gone through Colorado Springs. Loved it. That was wonderful. Our family had always lived in Chicago. I mean, everybody just lived a couple blocks away. You moved far away if you moved, you had to take another bus line to get your transfer from one house to the other. But this was an opportunity to already sever those connections during the war, went home and told family that they were moving to Colorado Springs. It would not have come had it not been for, in that particular case, the war and his moving. But he'd seen, instead of using some kind of crisis after the war as a threat, what am I going to do? He said, well, I'm going to go to a new place. We're going to start up there. So it may be the opportunity of making that kind of a move. Maybe the time when you want to move into a new field, perhaps something that you always thought you'd be interested in, that you have some skills in, some hobby or avocational interests in. How can you use an opportunity that could be a threat and turn it into a positive? Any of you have any examples of that? Yes.
I remember when I first got out of university, I majored in physics, and then I got a job at Boeing Airplane Company in Seattle. I remember the day I got my degree, I also got a pink slip. And that actually hadn't planned on staying in that, for a long time. But so we just moved 3 months earlier than we had planned to where I can go to seminary. But and then the other time was when we were living in Seattle, and the particular church I was serving at came time that I really had to move. And so we flew all around the country, took 3 weeks, and looked at all the different seminaries and stuff because my wife was considering trying to get some seminary training. We ended up lighting the place where we could both have service of a church and fulfill a seminary training plan. Hmm.
Any others? There are chances, I'm talking here about crisis, and that can be, as in your case, where you knew the inevitable was going to come, that you're going to leave this given parish, but it wasn't next Friday. When some of the wood mills, wood products mills in Oregon have closed, they've said they've given people a certain length of time. It's going to be maybe 3 months. Okay, you're in that kind of a situation. How can you use those 3 months to prepare for a move? Kind of go through some basic questions initially, and that getting prepared to moving the third one, to making new choices. What kinds of choices are open to you? Surprisingly enough, most of us don't think in terms of a lot of choices. One of the neat things about coming up to Holden is that you get in touch with people outside your own field in a different way, in a much more informal way. and the physicist meets the biologist who meets the parish pastor or the youth worker or the social worker or the salesperson or whatever it is, and you're talking at a different level, but suddenly, you know, there evolves a different relationship, a different sense of what other options can be. Often you don't have that. If you're stuck in one field, if you're a computer programmer, you meet a lot of other people who are in computer programming or who are in that particular business with you. And how can you kind of broaden your perspectives, broaden your options? One, of course, very basic, is something you have to do for yourself, and that is do some kind of a self-evaluation. An honest self-evaluation. The fact that you were great in basketball in high school, that was a great skill when you talked about high school and college, but now you are 45, your basketball skills are minimal. Maybe you're still pretty good at volleyball, but that's no longer really high on the list of skills that are saleable skills. But what are you interested in? What are your particular talents? One of the questions, John Schramm, former director here, he had a parish in Washington, D.C. for many years. And I met John and Mary, 16 years ago, I think. they were out in Oregon and had a chance to talk with them. And at that point, they were really involved with Community of Christ in Washington. I think, in fact, Mary even writes about this in her book called Things That Make for Peace. No, Gifts of Grace, Gifts of Grace. The question that John, the pastor, asked of people in his congregation is, in terms of stewardship, was, what do you really like to do? What would you really like to do if nobody paid you for it, but you could survive, you could live, people would give you money for it, but what that you would really like to do? And there's some people who really love to make coiled baskets, love to work with their hands, love to knit or weave or something like that, but they don't find that they have time, kinds of full-time occupations they're involved in now. Other people find that they, one of the people that John worked with was a real estate agent, who was very effective in putting together various kinds of real estate transactions. And when she came and said, well, that's what I really like to do. I'd almost do it whether people paid me or not. He said, fine, how can you use that particular kind of talent for the Lord? How can you use that as your stewardship? And she was able to put to help people who in other circumstances would never have been able to own their own home. She was able to put them into homes just because of knowing the ropes of the real estate business and getting some help in terms of some sweat equity and putting those things together. The favorite story, and I'm sure this is in the book too, is about somebody who didn't know. He'd always work because, you ought to work. And nobody had ever asked him, what do you really like to do? He was a very hard-working person. And finally, one day he called John up and said, I know what it is that I want to do. Because John, he couldn't become a member unless he had some kind of a pledge of something he really wanted to do, that he was willing to do, and use it for the Lord. And he called John up and said, I know what I want to do. I know what I'd do if nobody paid me, but I really want to do it. And John says, great, tell me. He says, no, I'm coming right over. So he came right over and he came bursting into their home, because it was a house church. And John said, all right, I'm waiting. He says, I'd make paper airplanes. And John said, great. and then could only affirm him, but John in the meantime said, my mind was going around, how are we going to be able to use this? How is the Lord going to be able to use this? And it was within a week, John was in a nearby playground, and of course they were right in inner city Washington, D.C., met the youth worker there, and said, hey, we're close by, if there's any way we can be of help, we would like to. And the fellow said, we seem to have most things together, except, I've got a group of kids from 8 to 12. They'd love to make model airplanes. John said, I know just the person for you. I like that story. I mean, as I said, I heard it 15 years ago, and when I saw it in the book, I thought, oh, John, now everybody's going to know that story. But I think it's a question we can already ask ourselves. What talent do you have that you would like to use, something that you'd like to do, even if nobody paid you to do it? Live, but what would you like to do? What do you want? And then find a way. How can you find a way to use that in some way to help earn a living for yourself and do it joyously? I've done that. I didn't know that I was doing that. I went back to teaching 3 years ago after having been out of it for 23 years. And I love it. I mean, Dale said, I don't want to tell the principal this. He said, but I almost think you'd do this if nobody paid you. And I said, yes, right, but don't tell him. I really, after being out for that long time, you know, I made my midlife transition and came back to a field that I had been in a long time ago. In terms of finding out what are your, enlisting your interests, your basic interests, and don't put down something your mom said, you know, you always interested in doing such and such, Johnny. No, I really wasn't, Mom. Just write down what you're really interested in. What are your talents? And then very, at the other end, what are your needs? You've got to put that into the picture someplace. What are your needs? But don't start out with that, because it'll really limit you. Start out with where your interests are, where your abilities, and then where your needs, and try to put together in some picture. There is a management system, it's a Wilson management system, that talks about types of people, and I'm only going to give you a very brief, not even a Reader's Digest version. I think this is more like the movie reviews in the Saturday paper and so forth. Wilson management system, there are basically four kinds of people within a working situation. There is one that's the controller. There's one that's the analyzer. There's a supporter. And there's a promoter. And it's just kind of helpful for you in analyzing yourself to know, hey, which one do I fit into the most? Now the controller is kind of the big boss. The buck stops there. It means he's willing to assume a tremendous amount of responsibility. But what does he want? He wants results. But as I say, he assumes responsibility. He's willing to make decisions and take all the flack. Is that something that you're comfortable with? That's important to know. If you're asked to come in at an executive level in a company, it's important to know if that's the kind of position that you feel yourself comfortable in. The analyzer wants data. He's the kind of person that wants to have how many did this, when did they do that, how many bags of whatever it is went through, and what period of time. He wants a lot of data. When he gets enough data, he will give it to the controller, and the controller will make the decision. But the analyzer is a very important part of any company. Your accountants, your business managers, all fit into this. If they really wanted to make the decisions, they would move over into this category a little bit more. The supporter wants relationships. Every business needs supporters. They're the kind of people that tie the business together, that are the glue that keeps it operating, that keeps people from being at one another's throats. Very important part of a business. A more passive role than these two, less control, but very, very important. And the promoter wants applause. You think of the people who are the promoters, the top salesmen and so forth. In many ways, they really show people. They put on good shows, and they want your applause. They want those kinds of strokes. It's very basic, but you fit in one of those categories. If I gave you 10 little tokens, and I said you could distribute them in any way you want proportionately in those four categories, where would you put yourself? Would you put four for supporter, and two for analyzer, and four for promoter, and leftover for controller? How would you apportion that for yourself? It's helpful, again, in terms of seeing what kind of abilities you have and basic skills you have to know how you fit in. Are you willing to take that responsibility? Are you willing to plow through all that data? You've got to be pretty much of a detail person to do that. You're down in supporters, you've got to like people and know how to help them work together. If you're in the promoter business, you have to be up, good share of the time. Neat thing to know about all this is if you give these people what they want, they'll usually give you what they want. You give a controller results, no excuses please, but results, you'll probably get what you want in your field. If you give the analyzer data, give him data. Don't say, don't go to the analyzer and give him 60 something. Well, the feeling was like this. How many people were there? How hot was the room? You know, all this sort of stuff. You've got to give the analyzer data. The supporter, if you don't give that person relationships, they're going to feel bereft and alone and won't give you as good a job. The promoter, if the promoter doesn't feel that he's being appreciated or she's being appreciated, the energy level goes down. And again, won't give you as good a job. So that's just kind of a little by the by. But I think it's an interesting little tool. There's a lot more to it if any of you ever want to go into looking into that system. But it's helpful in analyzing, again, where do you fit? What are your strengths? Another way of looking at your skills. When you get through with making your big list, then give yourself some creative options. You know, the brainstorming technique. Get together with your kids or some good friends and say, okay, these are my interests. What could I do? Be wild. I usually say to people, you know, give yourself 10 more options, 10 more possibilities, you know, really creative, wild possibilities after it stops being easy. Really push it, you know, maybe you want to go to Saudi Arabia and sell wedding rings. I thought that might be a fairly decent business. Really kind of push the, and get wild things up there. You've all known how to brainstorm. The idea is just to put up the ideas, no editing. Not because those ideas are so great, but because they often generate, help people think of other ideas. Put it up on a big piece of paper. Hey, make it a party. I mean, if you could figure a way to have a party, get people involved, say, I'm having a what am I going to do with the rest of my life party? And then give everybody a card with your interests and abilities. And if they have any additions, they might be able to add them on. You know, I might be able to sell this to Milton Bradley. And then say, okay, the beer and pretzels come later, but right now I want you to think beer for everybody first. Then let's have some creative options of what I might be able to do. And, you know, get them all up there. Lots of ideas. No editing. No, he couldn't do that. Oh, he'd never be able to do that. Or she wouldn't really. No, I might. Put it up there. And then when you're through with that, circle three things that really seem to fit for you. When you've got that kind of a fit, you might take one, maybe two of those and do some more investigation. Find out where you could use those. What companies need that kind of talent? What area of the country? Where you already are? Somebody might need that kind of possibility. What do I have to do to get there? That's what I want to do. Do I need more training? Do I need more preparation? Do I need community school programs? Do I need to go back to school? Do I need to prepare other family members for for a different kind of job, perhaps a different standard of living. Perhaps in terms of the evaluations, your needs aren't as great as you thought they were. You know, you've had your house for so many years that your mortgage is fairly low. You don't have to be, you know, that's not huge. You don't need a lot of the other things. When you've got some of that done, then you move into the system of networking. Networking has become a real big word in the last few years. Most of us did it normally. A lot of you had jobs that, you know, your dad's good friend had a job maybe in the warehouse during the summer, or somebody's kids needed babysitting. You use the friends that you had, not in the sense of using, in abusing, but as contact people out there, people who might know of work that you want to do and that would meet your skills and interests that might be available to you. And then you go in and you have to sell yourself. There's another way, besides the networking, that you can do very effectively. We have a good friend, in fact, a gal who was up at Holden and left on Sunday. She graduated from college with a degree in chemistry. She's been out of college probably 20 years now. She's worked most of that time, professional level, and she's never had a job that was in existence before she went in and talked to the company. Now, she is not a super salesperson, but she has a very clear sense of what abilities she has, and she has packaged those. And then her husband made a move, and as people did 15 years ago, you know, she quit her job and moved with him, and she went out to find another job. She did a little bit of investigating of companies in the area that used any chemical knowledge, chemistry knowledge. And then she went in and she made an appointment to talk to somebody about what their business was, saying, and so she learned some more about the particular company. She went and she said, these are some of the skills that I have, and I'm here, I'm not applying for a job, but I really want to know for myself if there's any way that I would be of value to your company. And I guess I really just wanted to know that I wanted you to know that I was available. In one situation, I think it was like they had absolutely no possibility for a position for her. Within 2 days, somebody had quit, but it wasn't a position that they felt she could fill. But the guys called her and said, I've been thinking with your particular skills, you can do some of this that so-and-so was doing, but you also have this in terms of some personnel skills, and we could put those things together. She went and she got that job. That's one that she has currently in the Portland area right now. But she has been able to, in some cases, see a need within a company and brought together her particular talents and in that sense sold herself to them for a need that they might not have already seen as existing. Okay, those are some thoughts on it. I cannot, obviously can't give you all the solutions. There are books around right now. What Color Is Your Parachute has a new edition every year. It's very effective, very practical. Talks a lot about networking, resume building, lots of books out, lots of things right now in terms of how to prepare a resume. This is another book by Bowles. This is the 77 edition, or 78 edition, which was in the library here. But there is an 84 edition out, and it's changed, it's altered. The kinds of opportunities available in 78 are vastly different from 84. This is Where Do I Go From Here With My Life, also by Bowles, and a fellow named Crystal talks about some choices and change possibilities if you want to make them in your life. The newer editions of both these books are available over in the bookstore. And there are obviously community colleges that provide vocational testing, helping you in terms of putting together your interests and abilities and skills. There are lots of possibilities out there. And as I said, this is just kind of some summation of ways to look at some of the crises and changes. I think the basic questions, though, of who are you, to whom are you important, can help you, in any case, reduce the panic and give you some strength to move on, to make some choices, make some changes, if that's what you decide you want to do. Any comments? Any people? Yes.
I've spent a long time since I was in the kitchen for a meeting like this now, and someday I'll go back to the kitchen. Do people still look for their things? So what do they look like now?
Resumes are increasingly, you know, it's a little bit like a credential. I mean, it's a credential. It's a way of presenting yourself when you're not there in person. What do you want somebody to know about you that would be important to them as an employer? You're not going to be there in person initially. And if they don't really resound to what's on that resume, you may never get a chance to sell yourself in person. So that doesn't mean you come out with a jazzy resume, but you certainly present your best features, your best skills, and put them together in a way that will best present you. It's kind of like you get dressed up in your Sunday best on paper to present yourself. There are some of you have comment about resumes?
I read a recent article that was written on how to write resumes, and one thing that really stuck in my mind was the importance to keep in mind when you're building your resume is the objective of a resume is to get an interview. If it does, it's successful.
That's right.
And it's not meant to get a job.
Because it's at the interview that you sell yourself.
Yes.
It's a little bit, I was in real estate for 10 years when I went back before I went back to teaching. And, the object of a telephone call was not to get information, it was to get an interview. The object of being on the floor and receiving telephone calls and ads was not just to provide information. It was to get a face-to-face confrontation, a chance to build some rapport. Yeah.
When you spoke of networking, and I thought, well, when I got my job, I didn't have to go in for an interview because I've been a volunteer. And that is so helpful for trying to live in the home and can't provide, go out every day. It can volunteer in the school.
Mm-hmm.
Anything like that on
resume. That's right. And that is increasingly important on resumes now. You know, 10 years ago, you didn't put down a lot of your volunteer activities on resumes. But certainly for women who've been in the home for a number of years, have raised their children, you've learned an awful lot about human relationships, an awful lot about transportation, you've learned a lot about organization, and they're beginning to start to value that. Even industry is doing that. So you work with the League of Women Voters, that comes through, you know, in what capacities, how do you handle that? Volunteer stuff is very important. Any other comments? But there are books, and this, What Color Is Your Parachute, really directs himself to that in a couple of chapters on preparing a resume. It's really interesting. The same friend has two young children, preschoolers, and she wanted to continue her work. She has been working for this particular company half-time, and she had structured her time. She wanted to make a change in that, and I can't remember exactly what the change was, but she went into her immediate boss with three different ways she could give the company what they wanted and she could still get the what she wanted, you know, in terms of split time, in terms of, I can't even remember all the options, but she thought through three different ways she could meet their goals and meet her goals. And then she presented those to her boss. All he had to do was say A, B, or C. His problem was solved. Rather than going in and say, you know, I'd like to do such and such and such and such, or I want to be able to spend more time with my children, and still I'd want to work. Then that gives her boss a whole new problem. But she went in and she gave him three options, three solutions, and he got to choose the one he liked best. It didn't take him more than 10 or 15 minutes. He thought he was pretty smart, he kept her talents around, and she was absolutely delighted. She could live with all three of those options. but your idea of coming in with various options, you know, how you could work within a given company, so forth. But you have to know the company. You have to find ways to get to know about them. Any other comments? Well, if you're looking for changes, if you are in a position of doing some scouting around, you are not alone. And there are a lot of people doing that, and that's invigorating. Because if they're thinking of leaving their job, maybe that's just the job that you would fit into. That means there are going to be some vacancies around, and some ways to adapt those particular vacancies to your particular staff. Any other comments? If you've thought about what it is you would like to do, if you could do anything you wanted to do, whether you got paid for it or not, but you know, you're going to be able to live comfortably and do what it is that you wanted to do, what would you like to do?
Throw a pot.
Okay.
Run a bed and breakfast.
You had a good experience in Wenatchee. It was in Chelan last week.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. And bed and breakfast. There's a certain part of you that means that seriously. Part of it is in the writing, and part of it in having people hear it. For many men, that's a new question. You know, many men, you've kind of been programmed to move in, to graduate, and move on into some kind of work, move into a company, and so forth. Not an awful lot of what is I really want to do. What is it that I feel a sense of vocation about? What is it that I feel called to do? And a lot of people, again, like, you know, discounting some of the creative options in a brainstorming. You say, I couldn't do that. I can never make a living doing that. Amazing. How could you use that calling and find some kind of a living for yourself, doing what it is that you like to do? Life's a lot sweeter, a lot more fun if you're doing something you really like to do. A real tragedy.
Part of the problem is that, like, I know sometimes I really want to do, you know, like the carpentry work or something, so I'll do it for 3 or 4 weeks and then I don't want to do it again.
Can we have you up here for 3 weeks every summer? I think we could find a place for you. Get it out of your system.
I mean, in terms of thinking about something
I think one of the things about Holden, and for a lot of people who've been in that kind of position, kind of between jobs, between school and career and so forth, is that there you have a lot of opportunity to try out a number of things around here, and particularly you don't get to try a lot of computers and high tech sort of stuff, that's for sure. But in terms of a lot of hands-on stuff, you know, the carpentry, the plumbing, getting into the woods, a lot of those types of things that people do have an opportunity to kind of experiment and know it makes a difference. So, but you're right, some things that you like, you know, like I really like chocolate, but boy, if I had it every day for 3 meals a day, I'd get sick of it pretty fast. I really like it. But it's some things that you are interested in, you only want them in short doses, or as an avocation rather than a vocation. If you can find in this little chart some sense of your priorities or some sense of your skills, where most of your skills are, can often find out a little bit about the areas that you might want to concentrate on.